Saptadvipa refers to the seven great islands or continents on the surface of the globe: Asia, Europe, Africa, North America, South America, Australia, and Oceania. In the modern age, people are under the impression that during the Vedic period, or the prehistoric ages, America and many other parts of the world had not been discovered. But that is not a fact. Pitu Maharaj ruled over the world many thousands of years before the so-called prehistoric age. And it is clearly mentioned here that in those days, not only were all the different parts of the world known, but already very nervous and is distraught. So if she can maybe draw or paint or something, because if she just sits like that, it's not fair on her either. And she's a child. It is clearly mentioned here that in those days, not only were all the different parts of the world known, but they were ruled by one king, Maharaj Pitu. The country where Pitu Maharaj resided must have been India, because it is stated in the 11th verse of this chapter that he lived in a tract of land between the rivers Ganges and Yamuna. This tract of land, which is called Brahmavarta, consists of what is known in the modern age as portions of Punjab and northern India. It is clear that the kings of India once ruled all the world and that their culture was Vedic. The word Ashkalita indicates that orders by the king could not be disobeyed by anyone in the entire world. Such orders, however, were never issued to control city persons or the descendants of the supreme selected lord politician. The Supreme Lord is known as Achyuta, and Lord Krishna is addressed by such as such by Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. Senayor Ubayor Madhye Ratam Shtapaya Mechuta. Achyuta refers to one who does not fall down because he is never influenced by the modes of material nature. When a living entity falls down to the material world from his original position, he becomes Achyuta, which means that he forgets his relationship with Achyuta. Actually, every living entity is a part and parcel or a son of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When influenced by the modes of material nature, a living entity forgets his relationship and thinks in terms of different species of life. But when he again comes in his original consciousness, he does not observe such bodily discriminations. This is indicated in Bhagavad Gita 5.18 by the words Pandita Samadarshina. Material designations create differentiation in terms of caste, color, creed, nationality, etc. Different gotras or family designations are distinctions in terms of the material body. But when one comes to Krishna consciousness, he immediately becomes one of the Achyuta gotra, or descendants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus becomes transcendental to all considerations of caste, creed, color, and nationality. Pita Maharaj had no control of the Brahma Kuna, which refers to the learned scholars in Vedic knowledge, nor over the Vaishnavas, who are above the considerations of Vedic knowledge. It is therefore said, Archay Vishnu Shina Diguru Shunara Matir Vaishnava Chati Budir. Vishnor Bhavaishnava Nam Kali Male Matane Padati Tam Pugudi Shivishno Nam Nimantisha Kala Kalusha Hishabda Samanya Budir Vishnor Sarveshvare Shetan Itara Samadir Yasya Panaraki Shaha. One who thinks the deity in the temple to be made of wood or stone, who thinks of the spiritual master in the civic succession as an ordinary man, who thinks the Vaishnava in the Achyuta Gotra to belong to a certain caste or creed, or who thinks of Charamrita or Ganges water as ordinary water, is taken to be a resident of hell. From the facts presented in this verse, it appears that people in general should be controlled by a king until they come to the platform of Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, who are not under the control of anyone. Brahmana refers to one who knows Brahman, or the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth. And a Vaishnava is one who serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh my God, dear Nisha. Maharaj Pitu was an unrivaled king and possessed the scepter for ruling all the seven islands on the surface of the globe. No one could disobey his irrevocable orders but the sainted persons, the Brahmins, and the descendants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Vaishnavas. So in the first paragraph, there are many points that Prabhupada makes in this somewhat long parliament. So in the first paragraph, he says how the whole world was ruled by kings from India, and the culture was Vedic. And we can even see that today when we dig a little bit deeper, when we go to different parts of the world. When we were in South America, for instance, we go to Cusco or Machu Picchu, which is the land of the Incas. We see they were worshippers of the sun. And even looking at the technology that they had, there's no such technology anymore today. For instance, in Cusco, the Spanish came. They destroyed all the infrastructure, of course, but the base. And on top of the base of every Inca structure, they built their own buildings, churches, residential areas. And because South America is a land of earthquakes, every now and then there will be a big earthquake, and all the Spanish construction would crumble, but the Inca structure stayed. That's a science that we don't have anymore. We were shown this one huge rock that weighed 30 tons, part of one structure, with like 30 different roofs, and no cement. So all the other parts, rocks that fitted into that one big rock, were cut so precise. That's another thing that's from the Vedic culture, the decimal system. The European system was fraction, whereas the Vedic culture had decimal, which is very, very, very precise. It's the same kind of structure that the old temples of India were made of. And the pyramids, it's the same thing. It's a structure that is lost. It's a science that is lost today, because we are no more connected to that Vedic culture. So if we actually dig a little bit deep, we can see in many parts of the world. For instance, one of my friends sent me pictures from China one time of a building, not necessarily a temple, but it was a very old building with pillars. On each pillar was carved Shiva with Nandi, or Krishna playing the flute. And that was in China. That was very interesting. How come? Okay, China is not very far from India, but South America is really far from India. And that's somehow it's a proof. And last year in October, we went to Gangotri and we actually walked to Gomorrah. And a friend of ours had actually started this yatra of Yamunotri, Gomorrah, Badrinath, and Kedarnath. He started that from Yamunotri, and he said there's path over the Himalayas that lead from one holy place to another. So we went to Yamunotri, we had to come all the way down. It took us 2 days. And then go back up to Gangotri and Gomorrah. But he walked over the Himalayas to came 1 month to Kedarnath. And he said, you can see the path over, they've been carved by the old kings. They're still existing. And because they're carved in the mountain, it means they will survive forever. So there's so many little indications of how Vedic culture, not only it was the culture, but it is eternal. And we can see a little bit of that in what is happening today in the world. You know, yoga, meditation, basically belonged to India. So nowadays, Indians are not so interested anymore. It has moved to the West. So it will survive, whether we want it or not, whether we, some parts of the population take it or not, that Vedic culture is eternal, it will survive. And in the seventh paragraph, Prabhupada talks about how we are chitta, fallen, and how we are contaminated because we have lost our original consciousness. And again, if we are somehow still connected to Vedic culture, that consciousness will never be lost. But how do we revive this original consciousness? There is a process, right? Okay, we talk about it. Actually, when we read about Prabhupada's verbals, what Prabhupada says, a lot of times Prabhupada is sort of repeating himself. And this knowledge, the Bhagavatam, is actually alive. It's a living consciousness. The book is living, is a person. And if we do not read the Bhagavatam with the intention of actually digesting what is being said, all we will see is Prabhupada repeating himself, and it will be boring. So here Prabhupada says we have to revive the original consciousness. How many times he says that? And the process, we also know, the process for us beginners is Vedic Sadhana Bhakti. There are no shortcuts in spiritual practices. There will never be any shortcuts in spiritual practices. We have been in this material world for countless of lifetimes. No one can even remember. We, the soul, it has been described. 1/10,000 part, the tip of the hair. The tip of the hair is where the bulb is when you pull out the hair. Cut this bulb into 10,000 parts. What do we see? Nothing. So basically, we are nothing. So, to revive our original consciousness, what would that mean? I am trying to understand I'm nothing, which is totally opposite of material consciousness. I have to prove myself over there. I have to be bigger than what I am. When somebody goes for a job, yeah, I think everyone of you who has ever worked, you have to set yourself better than you are. So everything about the material world pushes us to inflate ourselves. But if we want to revive that original consciousness, it is totally the opposite. What is the hope? When you think about it, you know, in reality, we digest that. Because even when we come to spiritual consciousness, there's a huge danger there. Danger is we come to spiritual consciousness like we're coming to a career. Today I'm Dr. Bozo, and tomorrow maybe I'll be the brahmachari. It's an easier example, I'm not being personal. I'll be the brahmachari and I wear saffron, and then maybe I'll become a grahastha, become the TP or the manager or something, and then, you know, it's time I renounce, and then my true identity should be revealed by now, or at least I should imagine it. Something high up there, or maybe not, a cow, a peacock, whatever it is. But again, to come back to that reality, I am nothing, so finite. And what is spiritual life? What is anything to do with spirituality? Anything to do with Krishna? What is it? Infinite. I, the finite, is trying to understand the infinite. It's just ridiculous. The only way I can understand Krishna is when he comes down. It's not my own effort. My own effort is that to want to be his servant. I try. But he's not a servant, he's down for it. He spent 90% of his preaching explaining what Krishna consciousness, what rasa, is not. 90%, and this is something we don't really like to hear, the rule saying, no, you do not, no, you should not. We like to hear the positive, but he says, if we understand those 90% of what rasa is not, the 10% follows automatically. We don't have to work for it. So basically, what do we understand here? To understand our nature, we have to eliminate this body. That body has to die. So I, that infinitesimal part, I'm covered with a body that is hundreds and millions of times bigger than I, the soul. And Prabhupada says in one lecture, we, the soul, are very powerful. But this dull matter is suppressing us. So that's the problem. Because we are marginal, we tend to come under that control. That's a big problem. And the process will always be something that is repetitive in a sense. Follow the four empty principles, chant 16 rounds, eat Krishna Prasadam, and associate with devotees, serve Hari, Guru, Vaishnava. We've heard it so many times that when we hear it again, it doesn't move anything in the heart. We become accustomed. It's become like a tape that goes on. When we hear about that, we go into this glazed mode. Oh yeah, I heard that. But why doesn't it do anything in the heart? Because it doesn't matter. We are identifying with the body still. It begins with Vaidisvatana Bhakti and the chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra on beads. What that which the Guru has given us, the 16 months day, is very important. It's a chito tapalaman marginal to stop the Bahamahatabhagini Vapanam. It's the beginning to cleanse our consciousness so that we can understand. And when that starts, this first understanding starts, the fire of conditional life will automatically go down. Knowledge comes. Then knowledge is manifested. To get rid of the gross body, it's very hard, but somewhat easier than the mundane mind, intelligence, and ego. That is so very, very, very hard. It's like trying to get rid of our skin. It's part of our body. How do we do that? We can only try and expect for mercy. And we cannot give up on the practice. We should not. The only way is when we chant with faith. But this will come when we automatically begin, maybe without taste. Sometimes, actually one time, when I first moved to Switzerland, I knew this one devotee, I got to know this one devotee, and the guru had just left. And so there was a lot of chaos and confusion. And I remember going to see her at a place, and we were talking about chanting, and she told me, I have just had this realization. It is better to chant a good rhyme than to chant 16 bad ones. So I'm going to start to only chant 2 rounds now. And that was 20 years ago. On the spot I thought, sort of makes sense, but personally I was attached to chanting my 16. But later, with talking to other devotees, we realized you need a structure. The theory of spiritual practices is the structure. So within this, that theory, one day, we hope to get a conception, to conceive. Our conception will always be individual because we are persons, individual persons. So that theory, that structure we need, even if it is 16 backgrounds, it is better to already keep that time. And hopefully, dirty water will clean a very dirty place, up to a certain point. And then, by that little bit of purification, would come, if we're sincere, the willingness to try to go deeper. So that structure of Vaini Sthanana Bhakti, we cannot dismiss, diminish, ignore, or adjust it according to our own thoughts. Like, again, I'm just taking from the real examples, you know, Bhagavatam is full of examples of real people, whether they're Brahma or Supreme Personality of Godhead. This one devotee, I remember, in Switzerland, he went to tell the guru that, "I am so busy with work, I cannot chant 16. Please, can I chant less rounds?" We know when they push, instead of losing the devotee, the guru just said, "Yes. Better to chant 16, but don't stop chanting." But then he did spend so many times in front of movies. We are good friends. So, what I'm trying to say is sometimes our mind will try to make adjustments. This is not trying to get rid of the body. This is trying to establish ourselves. All of us, unless we're purified, we see ourselves as subject and everything else is object. Even devotional service in the beginning is object. Krishna says four kinds of people come to me. The curious, the distressed, the one in need of money, the one in need of knowledge, pursuing knowledge. It's all we come to Krishna as either subject, I'm looking for something for my satisfaction. So everything else is object. And we ourselves might be, probably are, object to somebody else. So that mentality to change, because we've been doing that for hundreds of lifetimes, is like asking salt, "Can you please sweeten sweet rice?" It's very hard. So what is it that will carry us to that spiritual practices, not only for the sake of practicing for me, but the sake of practicing to one day please Krishna as he desires. I am your object. Do with me as you want. Like Prabhupada wrote when he was coming to America, "Now make me dance as you want. I don't know why I'm coming to this land. What do I expect? No idea." So what is it carries us? Only one thing that we possess. We actually do possess that is not the result of any experience we've ever had. Because everything else that we possess, that we talk about with conviction, it's a result of an experience, whether bad or good. But the one thing that is what we possess, that is independent of any experience, is faith, anushraya. It's a very interesting thing, faith. It means to trust blindly, without any knowledge of what to expect. And we all possess that. We truly possess faith, but we choose not to put it in things, people, whatever may be required, whatever it may be that requires faith. Because we have been betrayed since time immemorial. Faith is the only thing that will give us access to the spiritual world. Because faith we possess, at the same time it is outside of us, beyond that small, infinitesimal soul. It's the only element that can build that bridge to the spiritual world, to a world that we do not know. In this second paragraph, Prabhupada talks about Krishna, Achyuta. In so many verses, in so many classes, he says, we should try to get to know Krishna. How many of us can say we know Krishna? Most of the time we don't even know ourselves. Chaitanya Darpana Marjanam is a cleaning process with two words. One is ourselves, the Atma, and the other one, the reflection, we reflect the Paramatma. And that begins in that relationship. But we don't even know that we are Atma. So that faith, which is cleaning, you know, we start chanting our rounds. We don't see result, maybe, even after 3 decades, 4 decades, some of Prabhupada disciples could be 4 or 5. But the faith to carry on is very important. Because when Prabhupada talks about Krishna, we hear the one who has seen. Yeah, the separate soul sees the spiritual world, and just like the sun rays are extended to the mundane vision from higher up, they bring down the spiritual world. He says, you can see Krishna face to face. We just have to have this qualification. And he has to want it. He has to want it by seeing our actions. We do not see Krishna. We are seen. That's why it's called the darshan. So we have to try to see Krishna, Prabhupada says. And at the end, if we are fortunate, he says in this one lecture, then we surrender. So when we can understand from which level surrender starts, it's actually a bit scary for us. How many lifetimes will it take to surrender to Krishna because we know him? And it makes total sense. Why should I love someone? Why should I surrender to someone I don't know? Why should I love someone I don't know? And by Prabhupada said, we're trying to get to know Krishna by reading the Bhagavad Gita. It's the Uddhava Gita also. Because there he speaks about himself, but that willingness, that effort we put to want to know Krishna can attract his attention. Then he comes down to us. We cannot know him again. The infinite, try to know the finite. And try to speak about him. How? He has to come down. And there's another interesting story in the rock. Would tell his disciples, when you have to give Bhagavatam class, do not prepare for it. Just depend on Krishna. That's very scary too. At least if I would do that, I would not be able to say anything. Why? Again, that would depend on how surrendered we are. Everything to do with Krishna, that reciprocation that we have from Krishna will 100% depend on our surrender. That work that we have to do to remove myself as being a subject is what is going to attract his attention. And Prabhupada also mentions about deity worship, right? He talks about the deity here. Anybody who sees the deity in the temple doing great or wood or stone possesses a hellish mentality. And anybody who sees bodily designations like Vaishnava also is possessed of a hellish mentality. There's one famous lecture that Prabhupada gives about Galagraha and Chidigraha. How the deities in the temple is not representation, incarnation, imagination. He is directly Krishna himself, but we do not have the eyes to see. On that platform that I was talking about, Vaidhi Sarana Bhakti, we have a work to do. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvatithakur says, when we take to devotional service, problems will arise. And the process of getting rid of those problems is called anatta nivritti. So, as long as we are on that process of anatta nivritti, from countless of lifetimes, there's impressions in the mind, and all of them have to die. It has to come to the point where Krishna says, when thoughts enter the mind, it will be like rivers entering the sea. The sea level doesn't go up. I am neutral. So, the deities in the temple is directly Krishna himself. And to be able to see that, we will need a level of purification. And he will reveal himself to us according to his sweet will. And but right now, we can at least understand the theory, yeah? I was talking about spiritual practices. When we read the Bhagavatam, what we understand a lot is theoretical. We haven't digested it and realized it. Otherwise, most of us, talking to myself, about myself, when we read what Prabhupada has been repeating again and again and again in many purports, I sort of become glazed, and I just read through it without really understanding much. Oh, I've heard it before. Yeah, I've heard it before. But have I realized it? Oh, no. Definitely not. So, there are things that we can do. For instance, understanding that the deity is not deity in the sense of wood and stone, it's Krishna himself. That structure, that theory can make us act in a certain way. I went to a Christian school, and I remember on Sundays, my friends that were Christians, they would put their best dress to go to church. They always did that. And in church, if you're a kid, you had to behave, because it was a place of God. It was a place of worship. We were birth, just now we're coming from birth. And Bhujan Prabhu was telling us, he's of, you know, he took birth in a Jewish family. He was telling us that when he was going to the synagogue, he also was dressed with his best attire, in his best attire. And if he wanted, they wanted to be rowdy, whatever, they had to go outside, not in the temple. If we visit bhakti, that willingness to try to become a devotee, it's in the details. If we do understand, Krishna is actually present here, personally, with his associates. This is a sacred space. So I behave in a certain way, I dress in a certain way. It starts, this is where it starts. In those little things, to have the realization to do that is already Krishna reciprocating with us. It's not going to be my identity of who I am in the spiritual world revealed while I still have material attachments. If I'm still doing what the body wants or needs, it means I am not up there. If I do it with detachment, it's another thing. But we know our hearts, don't we? Our degree of attachment. So, even starting to practice not just what is given to us, but what we ourselves notice, we can do better. If we come into the temple, we practice in devotional service, let us do it to the best of our ability. We are already putting in the time. Why do we just half-heartedly? And Prabhupada also mentions that the Vaishnavas, they were not under the jurisdiction, and the Brahmanas were not part either of the king. So the rest of the population actually needed to be controlled. So that control is actually the structure. A structure of discipline is better than nothing. Because discipline implies a control. And control is the mode of goodness. So if we are actually not on that level of being that high Vaishnava, which probably most of us are not, Sarasvati Thakur says we are actually practitioners of devotional service. We are not really up there. And if we are not, then we need that structure of discipline to at least remain on the platform of the mode of goodness. And control liberates us. And why is it so important to always be thinking about the restrictions? Why is it always given to us? Because the mind is, the senses are very uncontrolled, and the mind is somehow following the senses, and the intelligence is making arrangements how to satisfy the senses. So if we do not have this control, we are basically lost. We can see that in the world today. We can analyze that and understand how it's working. The Western culture is based on satisfying the senses. And it's only a matter of time when everything goes crazy. Because how much can we satisfy the senses? Whereas the Vedic culture, the remnants of which is the Indian culture, we can see that, is based on satisfying the intelligence. Which means I control my senses now, and I do what I have to do, so that later, the result of what I'm doing is so much on a higher platform, I can enjoy it better. So there's nothing spiritual about that. It's just about having the discipline of control. So that even to live a better life. But that discipline of control is part of the Vedic culture. And it's a natural thing, actually. Yoga has become so popular, and to be able to do asanas, one has to be able to control. You know, when you do asanas, sometimes it's painful, you have to maintain a position for a while, breathing, regulate the breathing. It's all about control. So naturally people want control, because that control does free us. Now I will end with knowledge, that knowledge that we have from the Bhagavatam. It comes down. We cannot study and think that what we have studied, we can become a scholar. We cannot think that what we have studied will make us automatically devotees, Vaishnavas. Not necessarily. We can just become scholars. To actually receive, realize knowledge. It comes down. Our process is descending, never ascending. So when we realize that, we try to be sincere in all our actions. We try to include a little bit of reading about Krishna in our life every single day. We try to make an effort to chant a few good rounds. Today is a 12-hour kirtan. And we try to make an effort to commit. It doesn't matter who sings. Let's come and sit for a certain number of hours and commit to Srinam Prabhu. It's not about the singer. It's not about the melody. It's not about the instruments. It will always be about Sri Harinam. But Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, we so much do not have a taste that we need the distraction of instruments and melodies to kind of entertain us. But we do have the knowledge, even if it is theory. So that effort of pushing ourselves to want to do it, not for my pleasure, but to satisfy Srinam, is what will attract his attention. So Hare Krishna. Thank you. If somebody please share something, contribute something. Hare Krishna.
From your experience of living with children and participating in practice, can you please explain how you have faced for chanting or a face for the realization of Krishna to increase the mood?
It's a bit of a personal question. Krishna always... Krishna is always present in the heart, right? He knows us. And if even once we have sincerely desired to do it for his pleasure, he will test us. And it's painful. It's actually always painful. I can just tell from my own experience that you asked. One time we were in a certain country in the world, and there was one very famous, very good kirtan leader before me, and after me would be Madhava. So I was in between. I'm not talented, but a lot of times they put me for the Madhava because it's easier, it's more practical. You know, instead of putting me at the time when it's Prashadam done, there's nobody around, which means Madhava plays Madanga for me, we have to come twice. He needs to take rest also during the day. So that famous singer was in front of me, and the whole temple room, it was full, it was really ecstatic, they were all dancing. And when he was so ecstatic, the skitanier went over time, 15 minutes into my time. And it's not a very nice thing to do, because even if somebody is not as good as you, you should try to respect the time. You know, they're also trying to serve Krishna. So I'm just telling you, they were speaking the truth of what I felt. Very insecure. And anyway, and the funny thing is, when the person's time was over, the harmonium broke. Just at that particular time. But they brought another harmonium, and the kirtan of that particular person continued for 15 minutes. And then it was finished, all of them left, and I went to sit to eat kirtan. The temple room just empty. seed. Everybody left. I'm not famous, I'm not talented, I don't have such a good voice. Why would anybody stay? And the guru who was there also left. And it was very hard. I was almost on the brink of tears. So I turned and I told Madhava, I'm not going to lead. Nobody wants to hear me. You know, why should I put myself in that position? I don't want to lead. And Madhava told me, it's a service. You do it. No matter what, you do it. And something just cleared in my heart. I would be happy to lead if there would be people around. You know what? The space in front of you has just emptied. There's a few people just here and there. It's very, very hard. And something just clicked and I thought, it's not about me. It's not about me. But in any case, it's like, when Abhimanyu was killed, even though Krishna had talked the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, still he was very, very affected and he took a vow to kill Jayadrata. So in the same way, even though Madhava told me it's a service, it's hard to get over that ego. So I closed my eyes and I started to sing and I could not keep the beat because my voice was wobbling. Madhava is very good Vedanga players. He adjusted with the rhythm every time he would. And after a while I just forgot and I just chanted. I never opened my eyes. And when I opened my eyes, the temple room was full again. But I wasn't affected that day anymore. Fearful or not full, somehow, you chant helplessly in surrender because Krishna puts you in a situation where you are humbled. It's very hard. So if we're really sincere, bad things will come to us. Things that actually will give pain. When Kunti said that calamities come again and again, because seeing them means seeing you, O Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, one time, long time ago, one guru said, if we're doing our devotional practices and nothing bad is happening to us, no problems are arising, no devotee is giving us trouble, then it means we are such a big rascal that not even Maya cares. So, if Krishna has noticed us, he will try to kill the body, kill that falsehood. And if we can see Krishna in that, we get closer to him. Then we start to become impervious to whatever is going on around. Because everything is temporary. Everything is so temporary. Does it make sense? Somebody want to add something or share something? Oh, yes, Prabhu.
Since no one is asking anything else, I would put one more question. Can you explain more about Dr. Siddhartha used to ask someone with a bad singer, a bad leader, to be in the truth?
Yeah. And a lot of times, that it was Sri Aswami who did not have a very good voice. Could hardly actually keep a rhythm. But Vasyana Sati Thakur would do that so that the devotees do not become attached to melodies and melodious kirtan. is a great danger, because we come back to the same point. I am here for my enjoyment. It's so hard to not want to enjoy, to not want a result. Very, very hard. We come down to this world because of that. How can we even forget that? So, at the end of his life, he was hardly speaking, and he asked for Shri Rupa Manjaripada. That was his favorite kirtan. And he asked Sri Yaraswami to sing that. And because he was actually not a very good singer, had kind of a gruff voice, one of his godbrothers stopped him and had somebody else who had a very beautiful, nice voice lead that Sri Rupa Manjaripada. And Matsyananda opened his eyes and talked and said, "Why has he stopped?" And that godbrother said, "Because Guru Maharaj, he sings very nicely." Now, this is another thing that we have to be so conscious of. Sometimes people have a karma from past life of a beautiful voice. It's not necessarily devotional. But that voice can move sentiments in the heart. And we think this is Krishna acting. I was one immersion who grew up in the Indian culture. So I used to listen to sometimes Hindi Bollywood songs. Some of them were really sad. And some of them, and you know, some Hindi I do understand. And some of them were so sad. And if you're watching a movie and you're listening to a sad song, you would cry. It has nothing to do with bhakti, just sentiment. So we have to be so careful. You know, I think it was last year here we talked about sentimental and emotional, two different things. So careful about that. That's the reason why Bhaktisiddhanta would try to make it, you know, about the mantra. And so Bhaktisiddhanta said, "We are not looking for talent here." And she also resumed chanting Sri Rupa Manjaripada. You know, but it's something each one of us has to know. It's our own individual journey. Now, if we do not have much taste or attraction, better we come and sit rather than not sitting at all. Better we come and look for the melodies, melodious kirtan, rather than not doing it at all. So, you know, we have to see where we're coming from. That's another thing. We will never, never, never progress one decimal of a fraction in spiritual life if we are not real. We have to be real. Let me see my heart and see where I am. And once I see where I am, "Oh, I only like the melodious kirtan, and I only like a particular singer. So, okay, I go there. But maybe I commit myself. Okay, I'll go there. But let me do 5 minutes in the kirtan of someone I don't like. Just to attract the attention of Sri Ramprabhu. Because he knows, he will know the surrender that I am trying, you know, that what I'm trying to do, that surrender. What is expected of me, Krishna knows. What I try to do out of my own free will, that he doesn't know. Let us try to attract his attention like that. To do what he doesn't know, what he doesn't expect. Again, now to do that, don't try to be artificial. We have to know our heart. We have to be real. That, you know, we talked about Diksha Guru, Shiksha Guru. The one that we ignore a lot is Chaitanya Guru. Try to take guidance from him. Am I doing it for false ego? No, I'm going to sit in the kirtan of somebody I don't know. I could be doing it for my false ego too. Oh my God, she actually did sit. Great. Oh my God, let me go and be oasis with that person. we have to know. We have to be so deep and subtle. And that stage is reached only by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the cleaning process. To see what is the most subtle, the subtle of our actions that we're trying to do for our ego. It's 10 to 9. Okay, go. I think the last one. Yeah.
Talking about melodious kirtan, in order to make the kirtan more attractive and more melodious, many times the singers try to invent tunes which mispronounce the words of the mantra, like Krishna and Rame. Can you comment on that?
I think, Mala, you can say about this. Sannyasi told you what Prabhupada said about Rama.
This Sannyasi in Vrindavan, someone was singing Rama, and Prabhupada said, who is this Rama? It's not Rama, it's Rama. Because we're changing the whole meaning of the mantra. It's Rama, which means the Supreme Personality of God. It's not Krishna, it's Krishna. So we should be very attentive. Chanting with attention, you know, is one of the most important things. And that means pronouncing the mantra rightly. So it's Rama, not Rama.
And Prabhupada was Bengali himself. He never said Ramu. Do we ever have tapes where he says Ramu, Krishna? He doesn't. So where did it all come from? It's Kali Yuga. Contamination is everywhere. It's hard to stop that. And also, when you were saying, to accommodate the melody sometimes, devotees add an extra syllable to Krishna. Krishna. But Krishna is not three syllables. It's Krishna. Sometimes it will allow with Krishna. That's still two syllables. But not Krishna. We have to be attentive. You might not be chanting Hare Krishna after all. We were in one place a few years ago in one of the countries where there were thousands of devotees. And the melody was a little bit difficult. And at the end, it was... which melody was that? Vishnu Hari Hari. And the devotees were singing Vishnu Krishna Hari Hari Hari. Three Haris. And they were dancing! So much bliss! They were dancing, nobody noticed. And because we were in a country where we didn't speak the language, I was trying to say, sitting with them, with the women, Mataji, Mataji, use three hearts. And we like, just continue, Hare, Hare, Hare. It was hard to get it across. They were attentive. We have to be attentive. And also when the lead singer is singing a particular melody, maybe that's something we have to be conscious. But maybe the chorus knows the same melody in a different way. They're not listening to the singer. They're singing their own version of that melody. So Kirtanam, Shravanam, and then Kirtanam, we hear first, and then we chant. It's very important. Yeah, you know, we should not put emphasis on talent, but at the same time, Kirtan is like any other offering. We won't put somebody who doesn't know how to cook Raj Boga. They should at least get a certain know-how of how to cook. So some skill has to be there. Because I remember we used to tell Madhava, Krishna has very delicate ears. We do not want to hurt his ears. The karta player has to be tasteful. The singer has to know how to sing a little bit, you know, on our level. When we come to participants' level, then okay, we can have a frog also croaking Hare Krishna, we'll find Krishna in that. But we we should just try not to make it just about that. It's very important. And this is glad to your question. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for clarifying that it's not Ram love, but what's your opinion about Ram?
Yeah, it's 16th syllable mantra, and it should be Rama. But I did listen to Prabhupada, you know, we do hear Prabhupada chanting Gujapa. He goes, Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Ram. And he's not here, I'm going to ask him. So I, as far as possible, I can, we will say Rama, Rama. It's like even I know Rabu, a lot of the Kirtans, he says Ramo, actually. Again, he's not here, how can we put on asking? Let's just speak by what has been given to us and what will be. Prabhupada says, you know, the law books for the next 10,000 years. Yeah. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.